We don't always make the best decisions if it's just predicated on winning.
On today's episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we're joined by Coach Russell White, the head coach at California Lutheran University. A Cal Lutheran graduate, Coach White returned to his alma mater in 2019 after a distinguished high school coaching career. He began his coaching journey at Chaminade High School, then led Calabasas High School to two league titles. And at Crespi Carmelite High School, he transformed the program, securing two CIF Southern Section titles and two CIF state championships, while also earning California State Coach of the Year honors in 2015 and 2016. Since taking over at Cal Lutheran, Coach White has revitalized the program, leading them to consecutive NCAA Division III tournament appearances, including a 23-5 season in 2024 and 2025. In this episode, we talk about challenges he has faced at the D3 level, the offensive and defensive identity of his programs, and his rebuilding of a program at Cal Lutheran University. Please welcome to the podcast, Coach Russell White. Dr. Dish Basketball is the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches. And this month only, you can unlock up to $4,000 off on their lineup of professional shooting machines. Just mention the Rising Coaches Podcast to get even more exclusive discounts. What's up, everybody? Alan and Doug tuning in. Another episode, your favorite half hour of the day to tune in and listen to us. We get the opportunity to sit down, special guest all the way out, Cal Lutheran University, the head coach, Coach Russell White. Coach White, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm looking forward to it. Mage, been a while.
Oh, man. Long time. Yeah. But great to see you, brother. Bringing back some good memories already. We haven't even got started yet. So thanks for doing
gold.
This.
Purple and gold in effect.
No doubt.
So to give everybody, one of the first things I want to jump into, to give everybody a quick background, I know Coach White, I know you played for Mage when he was coaching at Cal Lutheran. Let's talk about, quotes, air quotes, talk about like the one thing I love to ask people that especially had a collegiate playing career is just how did your playing career alter the way you coach? Because now you at least know. You have those feelings, you've been in that seat, and you can look at those kids and say, look, I understand. So talk about just how that playing career had shaped your coaching career now. And then I know you said you have some dirt, or not dirt, but good story about Coach Mage. So feel free, throw it in.
Well, I use air quotes for a reason. I was on the team at Cal Lutheran for 3 years of my four. I know because I looked it up. I have all the stats, all the records right behind me. I played in 6 games in 3 years. I was a stat filler, 2 points a game, 1 rebound a game, 1 assist a game, yada, yada. I didn't play a lot. Our program, when I came in, Mike Dunlap had just taken over the program, and his first year was the year before I got here. They were 5-21. That obviously doesn't sit well with anyone. He went out and recruited half the country. I remember the first meeting that we had there, it was in the weight room, which is now a vocal studio, music studio on campus, whatever. That doesn't matter. But there was like 30 guys in there, and I was just happy to be there. I didn't get recruited until March. I tell the story now. When I came on my visit to Calu, we came on a Saturday afternoon. Hung out. Coach Steve Spencer took us around. We stayed in the area. And then the next day, my high school assistant coach brought me. The next day, we went to the NCAA tournament. So we knew it was March. And we were at the LMU-Michigan game where LMU put 140 on the defending champs. It was at the Long Beach Convention Center. And that was part of my recruit trip. I was recruited by one school. I wanted to play basketball. I came and... So long story, but to get to the answer you're looking for, my playing experience was just wasn't really a playing experience. The whole time I was here, I came to Cal. I knew I wanted to be a coach and a teacher or a journalist. And watching Coach Dunlap, Spence, Mage, Coach Hess, the way they ran a program, I didn't have that experience in high school. My high school experience was not. I didn't know my high school experience wasn't as good as it could have been until I got to college and I saw what true coaching really was. So I sat on the end of the bench. I was a practice player. And I just observed. That's the best way I could put it. For three seasons, I observed. The one season I didn't play, these are still my guys. To this day, the guys I came to Kalu with are in my phone. We talk regularly. I'll see one of them later today. These are my guys to this day. The guys that played a ton were all Americans, and me, who scored 15 points in his career, they're still my guys. But I just got to watch what running a program was about. And I learned that from Coach Dunlap, and that got me on my path. I graduated in 1994. So that was 30 plus years ago. And it's just continually evolved ever since.
Not everybody's going to have the same exact story of being a 5-year or a 4-year starter. And you at least get to see it from a different angle. So now you know people in those shoes who've had those experiences. You can relate to those kids even more, whether they're playing or not. You can have that conversation. Look, I've been in your seat, but you can work your way up. I think just having the experiences to be able to talk about it with kids, especially nowadays, is detrimental. Like, it's huge. Once a kid graduates, I just got off the phone yesterday. One of my kids is going through a midlife crisis at the age of 23. Because he doesn't know if he wants to go into a job or he has another year of athletics. And I'm talking to him like pros and cons, all this stuff. And yeah, it's just, but I've been in those shoes. I understand. I've had the experiences. And I'm like, listen, this is what to do. This is what to at least think about. And you gotta. No, so it answered perfectly.
Russ, I never asked you this. When did you know, like, you had an idea? Maybe you're thinking coach, teacher, journalism. But none of us ever really know that's what we want to do until maybe all the way into it, or someone nudges us into it. But when did you know for sure, like, coaching was it? Was there a point where you out of school for a couple of years, or we all have that moment where it really lays on us?
End of my freshman year, I had to make a decision on what I wanted to major in. And that after one season at Kalu, now my freshman year, we went 14-12, and you saw the growth. You saw guys getting better. I was a part of that. My freshman year, I played JV and varsity. So I was double duty practice my freshman year. Practice with JV in the morning, practice with varsity in the afternoon. These days, that wouldn't be recommended for load management, but that's what I did. It was what it was. Watching how the coaching was, how coach pushed the team, how organized he was, how committed he was to being really good, the level of accountability, all those things that I was drawn to. It. My dad was in the military, so discipline was part of my life growing up. I would have gone to the Air Force Academy if I could have got in, and obviously not play basketball, but I wasn't quite smart enough. Just seeing all that, at the end of my freshman year, I knew I wanted to coach, and I knew I wanted to teach. So I declared my major. The one year I didn't play basketball, Kalu, was my junior year. And long story, not whatever. I actually coached. I assisted at a lower level at the local high school, at Thousand Oaks High School. And that season, I still went to all the games and hung out with my guys, but I didn't practice. And I helped coach a team and didn't lose my love for it. Played my senior year JV. My senior year, Kalu was really good, and I played JV, went to all the games, and then as soon as I graduated, I got my teaching credential, was coaching at a local high school with some Kalu guys, and then here we are 30 years later. I coached 25 years of high school, and now I'm just finished my sixth year of college.
Yeah. Now, I'm glad you shared that, man. There's people that grow up wanting to be doctors, and I like the joke that until you see your first cadaver, you really don't know if this is it. Like, some people are like, hey, let's go right in, give me the scalpel. Other people are like, screw this, I'm selling insurance, which is fine. But you never sometimes really know until you kind of...
Doug, you know this, coaching Division III, like, you don't... 7-8 months of the year, you're not coaching. And the best part of this job is coaching your players and being with your players and helping them get better, mentoring, hold them accountable, whatever it is, just those interactions with those players. And in Division III, we have no interaction with our players except for high fives and what's up and how you doing between March and October. So this is a tough part of the year for me. I miss it. Like, I've coached club in the past. I'm not coaching club this summer. I miss it. I miss being in the gym and coaching guys up and
seeing that day-to-day. That day-to-day, no doubt.
I definitely, here we are 30 whatever plus years later, I knew in 1991 I wanted to coach, and I'm not looking to change professions now. I still enjoy it immensely.
No, it definitely is. It's unfortunate to, like, guys go away. They go away for the summer. You don't see them for a couple months, especially once they graduate. You really, if they're from a different part of the country, it's hard to really stay in touch with those guys, D3, because we don't really, especially D3, I don't want to speak for all schools, but at least the couple that I've been at, we don't travel nationally, right? We don't try and recruit nationally. Maybe an event here or there, but we don't really go to, like, the kids from Florida. We're not down in Florida every week to be able to say, oh, hey, I'm going to be in your area. So it is different and difficult to at least keep those guys in the gym. You really got to find gym rats. Like we say that to our guys all the time. We really got to find gym rats and guys who are committed, because if you're not, you're not getting better, which means I'm not getting better in a sense. But one thing I want to make sure to touch on is, and I found this really interesting, is your first year as a head coach, 2019 at Cal Lutheran. Let me rephrase that. First year at Cal Lutheran as a head coach. I know you guys had an up and down year. I believe you were 4-17, right? Or 4-21.
We were 4-21. I recall one up during that season. Not a lot of ups. A lot more downs. But yeah, keep going, Doug. Thanks for bringing that up.
I was going to say, I don't want to get cut off, because I don't want to leave it on a bad note. But the reason I bring it up is because the next year after that, of course, it was COVID year. I understand that. So it was probably a little harder to go from one year to the next. But then the next year after that, the 2021 season, you guys go 17-9. And then this past year, you guys blew it out of the water. And so my question to you is, like, your first year coming in as a head coach, it was up and down, right? Obviously, you said there was maybe one up and a lot more downs. And then this past year in 2025, you guys go 22-6. So talk about, like, coming in that first year, some first year head coaching bumps that you learned, and then how over the years you had progressed that program to be a powerhouse now.
Well, I got hired in August. August 19th, I believe, was the day I officially stepped on campus. School started a week and a half later. There was a large contingent of young men that were planning to play basketball, that had been recruited to play basketball at Calu. So I did not go get my guys. I did not go recruit. So we had what we had, and I knew this had always been the goal when I left Calu. When I graduated in 1994, the goal was to someday come back and be the coach here. So I get hired in 2019, and I know this at the time, it should be the last job I ever have. And I'm not in a rush to go from whatever we were the year before to winning national titles or anywhere in between. I know it's a process. So we take our lumps. We try and figure out how to get our roster to a good size. Again, there were a lot of kids that wanted to play that first year that had been recruited. We couldn't do anything until October 15th. Anyway, we work our way through it. The bumps, you said we got a half hour, the bumps and bruises that occurred that first year. And the learning curve, I'm not nothing about the players or the school, coaching high school for 25 years. And I was at a private high school, and I didn't think it was going to be a massive difference going to a small private college. I coached at a high level private high school. And you know, that age old expression, you don't know what you know. I can't even remember. You don't know what you know till you don't. I have so much to learn. And I thought I was going to be good. I really was, like all of us, were overconfident when we step in a new job. Oh, yeah, I can handle this. I can handle this. And I got my butt kicked 1,000 ways, learning a new administration, learning Division III, learning going from a 32-minute high school game on a small court to a 40-minute college game. I remember the first year we're playing at Whittier, and we weren't winning a lot of games, but we're at Whittier, and there's 6 minutes left in the game, and we're up 6 or something. I looked at my assistant coach, and I said, man, if this is a high school game, it'd be over. And we lost, and just all of it. There was so many things to learn, but you just learn. It's like everything else. You write it down in your notebook. You put it in your personal file upstairs, and you press on. You try not to make the same mistakes again. COVID hits, and then it's almost a reset. We were able to I was able to do a lot of stuff behind the scenes to reorganize the program, to recruit. I mean, we obviously recruited well, but interestingly enough, like when I got the job, and Doug, I know you do D3, like when I got the job, and I have a lot of guys like Mage and coach Division I and friends, and like, you always want to get a player above your level. A mid-major wants a high D1 guy, and a D2 wants a D1 guy, and a D3 wants it. And that was my mentality when I got the job. Oh, yeah, we're going to get some D2 guys. Like, I've been coaching in SoCal for 25 years. I know most high school coaches in SoCal. Most guys know me. I can get some guys. Cal is a good school. We're going to get some guys. We're going to be able to get some guys to come in here. And here we are 6 years later. My batting percentage on getting a D2 or a D1 guy to Kalu is zero. But we found what I'd like to say. We found D3 guys that have made themselves really good D3 guys. And because, like you said earlier, Doug, they're gym rats. And so we recruited hard. That year we went 17-9. We had two local guys that came to campus. They had 1 year of eligibility remaining. They both played a little Division II, little NAIA, had been on scholarship. They wanted to come home after the pandemic, and they were fantastic for our program and learning how to win and learning how to be good. We hadn't had the program hadn't had a winning season in about 6 years, and I might be off on that a little bit, but these were guys that had been playing college basketball, knew what it took to work. They were in the gym. They took care of their bodies. They really just laid a foundation for us, and it just got it rolling. It's a slow rolling snowball down the hill for us, but here we are. We've been ranked in the top 20 the last couple of years. We've been to 3 straight NCAA tournaments. The last time that happened, Alan Major was on staff in the early 1990s, and we're pretty competitive now. Just work, just grind, just work, learn from your mistakes. There's more than one way to get there, but you just got to keep working at it, and you're going to get your butt kicked more often than you want. But if you keep grinding at it, we'll get there. We've lost an NCAA tournament the first round 3 years in a row, and it irritates, it hurts, it sucks, but we're going to keep working. We're going to keep grinding. We'll find our way through it. Hopefully get another opportunity, but yeah.
One thing you said, man, and this probably goes for any level, not just Division III, but it's probably highlighted at the Division III level with no incentives, scholarship, NIL, things like that, very limited. Finding guys who love the game and finding guys who have won, like recruiting guys that have winning in their background, in their rearview mirror, and finding guys that love the game. And I always love to say, when guys love the game, it's hard to ask them to do too much because they have such a joy for ball that they're not going to let anything get in the way of that socially, whatever it is, off the floor stuff. And then guys that have won, that's just one less conversation you have to have, because if they've won before and they understand, like you said, you brought those two guys in that almost reset the culture in a sense.
Yeah.
Because they brought in this knowledge and this understanding that God bless the guys you have, but they just hadn't experienced that yet. And they had to have someone show them. So having guys that have won, like, that is such a huge deal, because now if guys love the game and they're going to put the time in, and then if guys have won and they understand the importance of that, and that everything you do is surrounding that mission of winning, it just eliminates a lot of conversations in between. I'm not saying the guys are perfect angels, but loving the game and winning carry a lot of weight when you're trying to not just build something, but continue to sustain it too.
I think loving the game is above winning. Coming from a winning program, it's great to have both, but finding a guy that loves the game, and that's not easy to find. I say that to our prospects. When we have a prospect camp, we're looking for guys that love the game, that grind it out. And people have asked me, how do you know if someone loves the game? And frankly, there's no metric. You really find out when they get here. Obviously, you talk to people. Are they in the gym a lot? Do they love the – do they do all those things that gym rats do? But it's different, man, when you get here, and now that we're an established program, it's hard for freshmen to come in and play. And you're the best guy in your team, you're the second best guy in your team, and you're winning, and you come into our program, and now you can't get on the court. Do you still love it? Because there's guys that are better than you, and you know they're better than you, and do you still want to get up your extra shots? Do you still want to get your extra lifts in? Do those things still interest you when you're not playing as much as you want? And finding those guys, I would say, has been a key to us and our growth and our where we're at now. We have found those guys, and I want to shout them out. Devin Lewis was a senior for us this year, was a first-team All-American made. You've been here. You saw some really good players. Devin Lewis was the first-team All-American Kalu has ever had. And he came to Kalu with one offer. We were the only school that truly recruited him. And that dude just worked. The only time we obviously – he was a fifth-year guy. He's got a job in the finance world already set up. Now that he's graduated, he's not going to go play overseas. He could, but he's not going to. But he was – his COVID year was his first – the COVID year was his freshman year. So he finished up last year. We had our issues like we all do with our players at different times. The only time this kid got in trouble at Kalu was because he got caught trying to break into the gym to get up shots on us the night when it was close.
Come on, man. How about that?
Man. How do you even get mad about that one?
No, yeah. He
had to go have a meeting with the residence life person, and I said, let me know how it goes. Good luck. And he ended up having to write like a one-page paper or something. I'm like,
yeah, 100 sentences. I will not break into the gym again. I will not break in.
But my point is, like, we found a guy who loved it, and he helped us take it to another level. And we had 15 guys like that on our team this year that just after practice, there'd be 10 guys, different 10 guys getting up shots and before practice and then later at night. Like, we just finding those guys has been the key for us. No question. Winning, and teach them how to win. Our program knows how to win now.
Yeah.
Do you love it?
Yeah, no, and finding those guys attracts the others. It's like bees to the hive, man. Once you get a few, then, you know, and they help you identify. Those guys help you recruit. And so you're talking about how do you find out a guy that loves it? You spend 48 hours with a dude on a visit, or 24 visits are shorter now, but they'll come back and say, yeah, coach, he's one of us. Or he's not.
At Mays, yeah. That's how – we don't take guys that our players haven't met, that haven't spent – I don't want to say we don't, but we rarely take guys that haven't spent time with our guys, haven't spent the night here, and our current players' assessment of their character, charisma, whatever you want to call it. Like,
yeah, grit, toughness, will.
He's a guy. Great. Check him off the list. Moving on. If they come back and say, yeah, we like him. Okay, now keep watching, keep looking. Is he good enough to stuff? So it's a massive piece to our growth.
Now, when you get to the point where your program's not for everybody, then you're probably in a pretty good place.
Oh yeah, that's you can weed out who you want. You can start to understand what you're looking for. And to your point earlier, Coach White, like I know you mentioned reaching out to those contacts. That's where not only having the contacts locally about the high school coaches, but then even that's a way to groom those contacts too, is asking those questions. Hey, like, how hard does this kid work? What can I expect from him? What's his GPA? What's his personality around the team? Now, let's call it how it is. There's not saying all coaches, but there are some coaches out there that want to fabricate a kid, make him sound a little bit better so then they can get a kid into college so then they can put a little more on their resume. But for the most part, most coaches, I feel, are at least the experiences that I have, most coaches are relatively genuine and tell you straight up, hey, this is exactly what you're going to get from the kid. So then you can know what to expect. And then, yeah, once they come on campus, it tells everything there, them and their parents. Going off of that, like, what are some of the biggest challenges maybe that you have came across since 2019, the last 6 years? Growing up to that, I know you said a couple challenges you had early on, but just growing and maintaining a successful program. Now, what are some challenges that maybe you have encountered?
Division III, you're right there, Doug. I'm finding the right guys. We're gonna bring in 5 high school seniors this year, maybe 6. So I think we recruit at a 8% success level or something like that. If we're gonna bring in 5 guys, we're probably gonna talk to 60, 70, 80 guys at some point, at least have a conversation, take a visit, go see them play. The grind of recruiting and finding the right guys. And then there's a lot of kids that want to come to Kalu. Kalu's expensive, and I can't speak for Chatham. I haven't looked at your fast or frequently asked question sheet. I don't know what your tool is, but Kalu tuition is $50,000 a year plus room and board. It's expensive, and getting the right kid that can afford to come here, you know, and Kalu's not Harvard, man. You don't want to graduate from Kalu with $100,000 in loans. That's not how this place is, and I'm happy to say that publicly, but finding the right guys, it's just a lot of work. It's a lot of time. The trickle down. I don't know if you've seen any trickle down, Doug. We've gotten no trickle down. The guys that want to play D1, they don't go D2. Or the guys that want scholarships don't get to the end of their senior year and say, oh, I don't have a scholarship. All right, I'll go play D3. They go to prep school. And then when they go to prep school for a year and they don't have the scholarship they want, they go to JUCO. And they'll do 2 years at JUCO. And then maybe if they still want to play and there's no scholarship, yeah, I'll go play D3 now. But how much is it going to cost? Man, that's a lot of money when I wasn't planning on paying for college. So the recruiting piece is hard. The higher education landscape, I'm sure you're dealing with this a little bit too. It's evolving. You've seen how many schools are closing and shutting down athletics and so we're not immune to that. We're having to watch our budget. We're having to keep track of those things closer. Those are two big ones. And then this, the standard stuff that you deal with every day, whether you're at a small high school in Ohio or a large university in North Carolina, like there's the rigmarole of the daily bureaucracies that come with your school district or your university that create roadblocks for us, you know. And all of us coaches take them as personal affronts.
How dare they make this change?
Yeah. We're trying to be good here, and you're just making this thing harder. And
right.
You know, being able to push through those trials and tribulations and doing our best not to take it personal, those are the things you got to deal with. I don't deal with a lot of academic issues. I don't deal with a lot of our guys. And this, I don't know if you've, I realized this maybe 2-3 years ago, and I have said this to other people. There came a point at my time here at Kalu where I realized these young men are paying to play for me. Not the reverse, where you go to Division I and you're giving them a scholarship, and now they're getting NIL money, and now they're getting revenue share money. You are paying them to play for you, and you're – when I came to that conclusion in my mind that these guys are actually paying a lot of money to come play basketball for me, it switched my mentality a little bit. We all want to be players, coaches, and we all want to have that respect of our community and our players that, hey, we're always looking out for our players. I coached a number of guys that went on to play Division I and Division II when I was in high school, and I don't think – all those guys came home and said, this guy has got my absolute best interests in mind. And I want to make sure my guys say that about me. Like, this guy cares about me way more than just basketball. And I have a service. I need to provide them a service. I need to give them a great experience at Kalu. That's my job. They're paying, the average person at Kalu is paying $25,000 to $30,000 a year to go to school here. And they're coming here, big piece of them coming here is because they want to play basketball. That puts a big onus on me as the head coach. Let's make sure this experience is good. Winning is the great elixir. We all know that. Anytime you win, it's all better. People don't care as much if they're not playing when you're winning. Yep. And we've been lucky enough to win the last couple of years. So we've had some – I mean, we had a great freshman class last year. I'm excited to watch them play this year. They couldn't sniff the court last year because we had 9 seniors. And now it's their turn. And none of them left. All 6 are coming back next year because they know their opportunity is coming and they enjoyed the experience even though they didn't play as much as they wanted to. That right there, am I going to give these – I need to give these guys a great experience and make sure they know they're cared about, help them find a job, get an internship, work through their problems, be a true mentor. Kalu's a situation where, frankly, the only one putting pressure on me to win games here is me. And I am a competitor. It's a blessing and a curse. And I'm going to work really hard to make sure we're in position to be as successful as we can possibly be. But you know how it goes, Doug, and Mage, you've been there too. But the reality is we graduate 2 weeks from today. I got 9 players walking down the, getting their diplomas, and some of them are from way different backgrounds. And I know we got one kid that never thought he was going to get a degree. Those are the true moments of success. Regard 3 NCAA tournaments, great. And I'm pumping our program up now. We've won 2 straight league titles. None of those things have been done since you were here, Mage. But there's other victories that we need to focus on too.
Yeah, for sure. No, once you flip it like that, you know, they're paying to come play for you. That creates an entirely different obligation, which is the way it, in a sense, regardless if you threw all the money out, whether them paying us or us paying them, that's how coaches should feel anyway. But it just adds a whole nother layer to it when the reality of that hits you. And then if you add up what every guy on the team is paying and whatever that total is, the 15 or 20 guys that you have on the entire roster, you add that up, then that's a whole different figure altogether. That's staggering. And then, but it also, like you said, it's when that perspective shift is a big deal, man. That's awesome.
I think we're all in favor of players getting paid and getting their share. I don't think any coach in the country is anti, but it's just become so transactional at that high level. What are you going to pay me?
Yeah, that's the first conversation.
And I've had that conversation. My son's going to play Division I next year, and we've gone through that a little bit. But, like, those coaches are now saying the first question they ask is, what is it going to cost? And now you reverse that to me, and maybe you, Doug, as well. Again, I don't know the financials of Chatham, but in every conversation I have with recruits, in the first conversation, this is what it's probably going to cost you.
Yep.
If it's not in that, if you're not in that ballpark, see you later, man. Good luck. No sense having this conversation any further.
No, completely. And especially if you can sell that type of, I look at it that way. If you could sell that product, you could sell that number to a kid. I don't even want to say sell it to a kid because they want to be in, you want to be in comparison with them too. You want to match with them. There's been times where a kid has come in, we saw the financial aid package and I said, look, I'm going to be honest with you. The other things that you have are better at other schools, and it'd be stupid for me to point you to come here. I obviously want you. I'm interested in you, but I don't think this is probably going to be the best bet because you're going to be in debt once you graduate. I had someone tell me that was stupid for you to be so honest. I'm like, I don't think it's stupid. I think it's me looking out for the better of these people. And then them finally, like, honestly, sometimes when they look back on it, I've had people say after, I can't, that was very nice of you to thank you very much to at least point us in the right direction. And it shows that you have their interests on in first. And I'm not trying to talk myself up here, but it's just, I feel like that truly is the best way to do it is, look, this isn't the best interest for you. If it's not, okay, if we can make it work and try and do the best we can. But I don't know if this might be the best because you're going to come out of here with $100,000 of debt, exactly how you said. And it's not the best selling point. So maybe there's a better opportunity for you. And I think they love that. They respect that.
My Kalu alum, not alum, former experience here is yanking at me now, but also for the Rising Coaches masses. Take us under the hood, basketball wise. If somebody said, what's Kalu like, style of play? You're on a phone call and somebody says, hey, what, tell me about, and I know sometimes style of play, people, there's all the catchwords, pace, space, up tempo. I know you. You can go, I know you'll go deeper than that, but give us an idea offensively, defensively. How do you guys play and why are you guys successful?
I think we're successful because we adapt. I don't recruit to a system. We don't run the same things every year. We 2 years ago, I believe we were a top 15 team in the country defensively. This past year, we were top five in the country offensive efficiency. We changed, we evolved. We weren't as good defensively this year. We all know when we get in the gym October, we're going to be working on our defense. We need to get better at that based on this year. I'm of the ilk where I just try and get the best players we can and then figure it out from there. I don't know exactly what we're going to run. This year, two years ago, we were really good at defense, and I felt like when we didn't win games and when we lost games was because we weren't as good offensively. So took the approach, hey, if we're going to get better offensively, one way we can do that is take more shots. We were a good shooting team. 2 years ago, we were 36.5% from the three-point line. We're okay from the twos. We really good free throw shooting team. All right, let's get more shots. So we sped up the pace a little bit, and we tried to speed up the pace. I think statistically we weren't very fast, so we're going to try and get better at that next year. But we shot way more threes this year, and we're way more willing. I told the guys, hey, go ahead and get up some shots. Let's push and get up some shots. I even said there's going to be times where in the past where I might not have wanted you to take that shot. I'm going to be okay with that shot this year because we're trying to play a little faster and get more shots a game. Let's get 10 more shots a game. Let's get 12 more shots a game than we did last year. And we worked on that a lot in the preseason, and it played out. We were a fairly dynamic offensive team. We shot 33s a game this year. We shot almost 40% as a team from the three-point line, and because of that, we were a top five team in the country on offensive efficiency. We shot 77.5% from the free throw line. We just didn't get to the free throw line enough.
Which happens for teams that shoot a lot of threes. Sure. That's a side effect of it at times.
So how do we play? Most of the time, we're man-to-man defensive team in high school. Heavy help side, take charges. In the past 5 years, that's completely evolved. If you can't guard your man, it's going to be really hard for you to play because we don't want to come off guys on the perimeter. We'd rather give up a contested two than an uncontested three. Everyone can pretty much shoot at this level. So if you can't sit down and guard the ball and make guys shoot over you,
get comfortable.
You don't even have to finish that sentence, man. It's just like everybody in the country knows how to fill in the blank.
I don't know how many viewers you get on this podcast, and it's, but they all know what we're talking about.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely. No question.
You know, I like to, it's probably going to be I call it an FNF crowd for this podcast. It's going to be friends and family, probably only like most of our games at Division III level. It's an FNF crowd, friends and family only. But yeah, if you can't guard, man, it's hard to put you on the floor. And even if you're a good shooter, everyone's a good shooter basically at this level. You don't get a whole lot of catch and shoot threes at this level. Got to guard. And that being said, I'm sitting here telling you, you got to guard. Doug, how many guys have you brought in? Because, man, that kid can guard. I want to bring that kid in. Like,
not many.
That's the reason why.
Can you score? Can you move? Are you a good athlete? So then you get here, and now it's okay. We got to teach them how to guard. We got to teach. So the year we were really good defense, and we did it this year too. But man, one-on-one defense every day, two-on-two defense every day, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, whatever it may be. But every day we were guarding the ball and teaching bigs how to guard. Guards and teaching guards how to guard bigs, guarding, post guarding, one-on-one in the post. As long as you're not giving up what I call back of the hand on the glass, back layups, we're going to live with it for the most part and try not to foul.
Tough twos. Yeah.
Make them contest every shot. You got a good chance.
Yeah, for sure.
Contest every shot without fouling. You got a really good chance to be in the game.
No doubt. And then, like you said, on the other end, you just turned it into from the 2 years ago to this year was basically a math equation.
Yeah.
In a sense, right? You just played simple mathematics. We shoot better, so let's shoot more. And over the course of the law of averages. Yeah, if we don't hand it to them, take care of it.
Rebounding. We offensive rebounded at a, I think, 36, 37% rate on the year. We wanted to be 40. The goal was 40. So we worked on that a lot, and we were better this year than we were last year. Offensively, we were good this year. We weren't great in the game we lost in the NCAA tournament, but if we're telling sob stories, not that you asked for them, but 2 years in a row in the NCAA tournament, we had our worst three-point shooting night of the season. 2 years in a row.
If it makes you feel any better, those brand new NCAA balls are very hard to use. They get right out of the wrapper. My first time in the NCAA tournament, I was a player. I grabbed one of those things. I shot a mid-range. I remember that felt terrible. I was like, oh, God. So blame the ball. We'll blame the ball.
Pulled it right out of Dick's Sporting Goods.
The feeling and everything.
I'm not blaming anything. I'm just stating facts. Tough nights.
I got you.
First round of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it does.
Process.
That's the NCAA tournament too, right? That's the –
You're playing better teams.
Yeah.
I haven't coached Division I, and at Mage, you've coached both levels. Is it harder to make the Division III national tournament than the Division I national tournament?
It's hard to make any national tournament.
Fair.
Period. It's hard. Winning is hard. When you're one of the last 60 some odd teams playing out of whatever, 300 or whatever the numbers are, I don't know what the breakdown is for either level, but
410 winning Division III.
What's that? 410. Yeah. So there you go. 370s in the Division I now, 380 in that range. So winning is hard, period. But it's the worst time to maybe have your worst game, but to be still playing at that stage, you can still say at the end of the year we were one of the best, even though we had a bad night. Still doesn't define a great team.
And then those young bucks know that they got to do, and you get a taste and you see it, division, you know, like. Yeah.
It's clear. It's clear cut. They've seen it all. They've seen it A to Z. They know. That's awesome, man. This is selfishly for me. I'm just thrilled what you've done and continuing to do there. That place will always have a spot in my heart because that was my very first coaching job as a grad assistant. That was my very first spot, and just the experience of a lifetime. Never forget it. So it was awesome. Glad that the Lou Dogs are back, Dougie. The Lou Dogs.
I'll tell my Mage story now. The Lou Dogs are here. So the one story I remember with Mage, Coach Dunlap, God bless him. I'm not where I am without him. There's no doubt. And I think a lot of us feel that way about him. But Coach can be a little feisty, as I can too, to be frank. That's probably where I get it. Thank you. I can be quite feisty myself, and I learned from one of the best. But I remember we had a bad practice, and that office that we had is now gone. That's been taken out. It's not there anymore. But there was a football office, a basketball office, baseball office, and a little lounge right in between them all, right off the gym. And after practice, shower, change, I go to see the coaches in the office. And in the lounge, we had three assistant coaches. It was Steve Spencer, now the head coach at Orange Coast College, Jeff Young, who was the coach of Chaminade when I started coaching high school, and Alan Major. And they were sitting on a two-person love seat, all three of them, sitting together, squished together like this. This is my memory. I'm obviously probably wrong.
Yeah, it's like a crowded dentist office.
It was right in here, just no space, and Coach Dunlap was standing up 10 feet in front of them, giving them the business. Boom, boom, practice. I just opened the door.
Yeah.
Closed the door.
Walk back out.
I remember that.
Yeah, we're not going to listen to this one. Didn't see that. Turn around, walk away.
Yeah.
The old glad Bart you missed Simpson it. One where the Bart Simpson meme where he pokes his head out of the bushes.
And then slowly goes back. Yep.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. No, that was it. I wish I could have done it that day, but there were no bushes to hide in.
You were on the couch.
We were out in the open that day.
You were the firing range.
Yeah, but no.
Well, Coach White, no, we appreciate it. Well, we always like to wrap it up at least with one question, and we want to make sure to keep you on schedule too because I'm sure you got a lot going on with the last couple of weeks here of school. But just looking back on your career so far, if we were to put you back in your first coaching position, so following your playing at Cal Lutheran, I know one of the positions you stepped in, Chaminade called prep, especially as an assistant, but taking you back into your younger self as a young assistant coach, knowing what you know now, what piece of advice would you share with your younger self?
Don't focus on winning. Focus on other things. However you want to say that, focus on what it takes to win. Focus on your players. I alluded to that earlier. I look back to my first head coaching job. I coached at Calabasas High School here in SoCal from 1999 to 2006. And similar deal, my first year, we were 4-21. 6 years later, we were playing for championships and winning lots of games. But I don't think I gave those guys the best of me in terms of just being the best person I could be. I was very focused on winning. And there was a time when I was coaching at Crespi where I stopped talking about winning. To this day, I do not talk about winning. I don't say, hey, we need to get this one. We're going to win 20 games. We need to win this championship. I consistently talk about getting better. I consistently talk about improving and evolving. And I know it's a small detail, but I think we get caught up in the winning and we make, I think coaches, and I know I did, we don't always make the best decisions if it's just predicated on winning. If our focus is our players and the process and being the best we can be every single day, and a little John Wooden there for you, who hosted all of his camps at Cal Lutheran. If I may plug in Cal Lutheran and John Wooden, just that would be the advice I would give myself and to anyone. And you guys do a great job of pumping these things out and helping coaches get better. And we're looking, I plan on being at your clinic in Westmont. It's a solid hour drive up the coast for us here at Cal U, and I'll bring my staff as well. But we all want to win. We're competitors. Ultimately, I got into coaching because I wanted to stay in the game. I wanted to compete. I love competing. But don't forget that you're going to be defined way more by how you treat your players, how your team's improved, long-term stuff. Ultimately, I just wish I could have treated those Calabasas players a little bit better. And so I still talk to some of them. I do, but I could have done a better job with all of them. And that's what I would put out there to all the people that are getting into this business and starting up and figuring their way. Don't forget these guys that are helping you win games are humans too. And they have feelings and they want to win too. I'm pretty sure they're all trying their best to be the best they can be. If not, that's enough for conversation. But put your players first. The wins will come if you do things the right way. If you're all about winning, it can get convoluted sometimes.
Yeah. Perfect. Love it, brother.
Classy. It's very straight cut. Like it sounds like it's very easy, but it's a lot more complex than it really is. The advice that you gave, it really is more in depth and about the people. Keep the people happy. And if you got good people around you, more will come.
That's great advice. And the beauty of what you said, Russ, is it's advice, but it's also a commitment.
It's an everyday life thing, too.
Yeah, sometimes people take advice as like a quick Band-Aid approach. You know, let's fix this for the moment. And that's advice. That's great. Yeah. But what you're talking about is a commitment. That's a cultural, daily, starts with you, trickles down to the staff. You drive in thinking about that every day. And like you literally.
I think if we get really good at it, it permeates to our players too.
No doubt.
They take it out beyond. And I don't know how good a job I'm doing with that sometimes with our, I know I'm trying to treat our players tremendously well and give them a great experience. At the same time, hold them accountable. This ain't a free ride. We're trying to be really good. And that takes a high level of commitment and a high level of sacrifice. But that doesn't mean I can hold you accountable and I can, but I don't have to be demeaning in that process.
Yeah. No doubt.
I can be tough. I can be mean. I can raise the bar. That doesn't mean I got to be demeaning. And then every decision that we try and make here is just our players. I would say, Doug, you talked about traveling. I know we're coming up on a time stop here. We made a commitment to have 20 guys on our roster. And when we travel by plane once every year, we're coming to your neck of the woods. We're actually going to Marietta next year, Doug. and we're going to Cleveland and Marietta, and we're taking all 20 guys. We're going to travel everybody. We're not leaving anybody home because it costs too much. We're going to go raise money so we can take everybody on this trip. We're not leaving anybody behind, and that goes to the commitment to giving these guys the experience that matters to them long term. And then they want to stay. How many teams had 9 seniors on their team last year? 3 were 5-year guys because of COVID, but still 6 big number of seniors.
Well, that's
– oh yeah.
I'm proud of what we're doing here.
And no doubt, man.
I'm proud of how we're doing it too. So
proud of you, my brother.
Thanks,
thank
mate.
Thank you for doing this to hang out a little bit when Dougie lands a plane. But like I said, man, just thrilled to death that I've always felt like that place, for what it did for me, always a special place in my heart.
Me too, man. I grew up here, man. I grew up here. So yeah. It's always special to me, and that's why I wanted to come back. And I look forward to seeing you. What is that, middle of July?
Yeah, 22nd, 23rd.
Make sure to plug that. Got to make sure to plug that. And that was actually what I was going to do, so you did the advertising for me.
And you didn't even tell me.
That's right.
I didn't even tell you. July 22nd, anybody listening, Rising Coaches Conference, partnering with U.S. Nike Basketball Camps and Snow Valley Camps. Westmont College, as I said, July 22nd. We already have somebody who will be there, Coach Russell White, Cal Lutheran out there. Going to be another like-minded people, other like-minded coaches. Feel free to lock in, and we'll see you in California. But, yeah, thanks for the easy plug.
I'm here for you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me and give me a chance to talk about our profession and Calu a little bit as well. Mage, until next time.
Yeah.
Looks like it'll be in about 2 months.
Keep for killing sure.
It, keep killing it.
We're trying, man. Thank you. No, I'm look forward to seeing you, man. And again, like I said, hang out a little bit, and then Dougie will land the plane and take us out.
All right.
Thanks, folks, everyone, for tuning in again. Another episode of Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, Alan and Doug, keep working, keep rising, coaches. We'll see you all next time.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.